makes a very pleasant change. It's yeah, it's good to work here. Nice, lots of new animals, new plants, new experiences.
One of the activities of the invasion is to protect the endangered animals. Can you, what are the most endangered animals?
According to the IUCN, which is the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, they list all key species and are trying to categorise all animals in terms of their endangered status. So if there's not a problem, they call them least concern. If there's a little bit of a problem, they classify them as vulnerable. And if there's more of a conservation threat that may be exploited, then they're called threatened. And then you move up to endangered and critically endangered. Now, the turtles here are endangered. One's critically endangered and one's endangered. So that's quite a severe threat in terms of survival. They have a very strict criteria for applying these classifications. The hawksbill is one of these critically endangered, but it still has a very big population. And the green turtle also has a big global population. But if the population decreases by 30%, then they can move into this critically endangered and endangered criteria. And that's where the turtles fall in, because their population is still very large globally, but it's falling rapidly. So there's the turtles. Other species involve the cetaceans. They're all under threat, dolphins. And in terms of fishes, the hamor is considered vulnerable, and many of the sharks and rays are also quite vulnerable because of the shark fin trade. A lot of them are caught and their fins are removed, and around the Arabian Peninsula, just the eastern end of Arabia, there are many, many sharks caught and traded in the Far East for things like shark fin soup. But one of the contributions that the UAE can make is the fact that it has low industrial fishing techniques. Many of the species that are endangered throughout the Indo-Pacific region, because we're all linked. The sea, we're at the western end of the Indo-Pacific, so in the marine environment, you get the same species occurring in Japan at the other end. Many of them the same. But we have a contribution globally in that many things like eagle rays do well here because there's not destructive fishing methods. There's only traditional local methods of fishing. So we have a role there. So those are the main threatened species.
So, I wanted to ask you some questions about the moored fish. How do you, can you control its conservation? Because you say that it's, I don't know how to say it, overfishing. Moored is just a shell.
Overfishing.
So, can you control its conservation?
We are an NGO. That means a non-government organisation. So we are not directly responsible for enforcement of rules and regulations associated with fishing. In Abu Dhabi, the responsible agency is EAD, which is the Environment Agency of Abu Dhabi. And in Dubai, it's the Dubai Municipality and EHS, which is the Dubai World Enforcement Body. And these agencies are responsible for locally regulating and enforcing the fishery. But there's also there's a hierarchy of government, and at the UAE, the country level, there is the federal authority, and they introduce laws that are applicable throughout all the various Dubai and Abu Dhabi. And they've introduced a statute called Federal Law 23, which creates all the rules and regulations that the competent authorities in the local areas must enforce. So the legislation is there, it's just a question of who does it and how well is it done. And many countries fall down on this. It's not just developing countries, even well-established countries. Even France in the EU has tremendous problems enforcing their fisheries rules and regulations. And I wouldn't say that it's perfect here. There could be a lot more activity. But what they have got is a complete ban on trawling. So there's no bottom trawling here. And there's also a ban on monofilament nets. So these are practices that take place elsewhere and are very destructive. But once you damage the sea bottom, it can take many years to come back. So that doesn't happen here. So there are some good overall rules that make, because you don't need to enforce a complete ban. No one is, there are, if you see a trawler, it shouldn't be here. So, but there are some activities that are easy to enforce because they're completely banned. And there are seasons for various activities like purse seining, where the nets are circled around things like sardines. They are only allowed to operate for 6 months of the year. So there are some general rules that work very well to enforce a fishery. But just seeing whether an individual fisherman is taking fish of the right size, that's not enforced particularly well. Yes, you heard from Laurence about Sibanius, that's in Abu Dhabi, and of course you heard from me about Nakheel. Mm-hmm. So the marine environment here is in Dubai. We tend to only work mostly in Dubai and Abu Dhabi, but we also do work with Sharjah. We're hoping to do some turtle monitoring on an island which is in this direction, west-northwest from here, that's 65 kilometres, and is the best island in the UAE for turtle nesting. There's some 200 nests there each year. We hope to monitor the turtle nesting there this nesting season, which is just about to start in mid-March.
Why are the coral reef locations less common than the artificial reef formations?
Artificial reefs, well, you can have artificial reefs for more than one purpose. You can have artificial reefs to keep the divers happy. So when the tourists come and the divers want somewhere nice to dive, you can put down artificial reefs for them. They tend to like all sorts of funny things like tractors and planes and things that look interesting underwater. You can have artificial reefs that are designed to support and enhance the fishery. You can have artificial reefs that are to put down some hard substrates so that the corals can grow. Corals can't grow on soft sand, and much of this area is all soft sand, so if you want corals, you have to put something hard down, just something like rocks or something like that, for the corals to grow on. So there are lots of different types. You can even have an artificial reef for surfing. By making a low barrier, you can create surf waves. So there are all sorts of different purposes for artificial reefs. And we've been involved in some projects to have fishery enhancement reefs, and we have also done a translocation scheme for corals, so where we put down boulders. So we've been involved in two different types of artificial reefs.
Why did you choose this job?
Why did I choose this job? Right, when I was when I first did a job, I thought I can't do a job in zoology, because, which is, you know, the study of animals, because this is what I like doing, and no one's going to pay me to do what I like doing, I didn't think. So I thought, well, a biochemist will get a job. There's lots of needs, work for biochemists. So I did a degree in biochemistry and physiology, and then worked in a laboratory for Beecham's, who is now SmithKline, one of the biggest pharmaceutical companies. And at this time, we're going back a long way now, we're going back all the way to 1976, long before all of you were born. And at that time we worked on something called flufloxacillin, which was now a very important penicillin, which saves a lot of lives. It's still very important today. And the reason we were working on penicillins was because the company I worked for, Beecham's, was running out of the patent. That means that anyone could make. Patents only last for a period of time, and then anyone could make it. So they were going to lose the main income. So they wanted to make bigger and better penicillins. So we were a team working on penicillins. And we made this fantastic penicillin. So you think we would get some of the profits, but no, the laboratory manager got the profits, not the scientists. And this I found very unreasonable. We were wealth creators, and yet we weren't participating in the profits. The salesmen got the profits, the business managers were getting the profits, and that's still the same system today, so it made me quite cynical. So I decided to retrain and just do what I like doing, which was playing in water and managing the environment. And I did an MSc, a master's degree, in applied hydrobiology, which is managing water, and I've worked in water ever since. I've never regretted that move, going from sort of industry and business into managing the marine environment. You get less money, but it's very satisfying. A lot of it at the moment is winning work, because although we're an NGO, we still need to be funded. We need to cover the salaries. This morning I was at TDIC, which is the tourist development company in Abu Dhabi. They're the ones developing Saadiyat Island and Discovery Islands. And I want to do some monitoring for them on Sudanius. They've built some mangroves there, and I want to monitor the mangroves and find out what ecological services those mangroves are providing. You know, what function are they servicing? Are they working well? And to monitor all the bird populations around the islands, Discovery Islands, because they have some very good bird populations. There's a Socotra cormorant. That question about the endangered species. The Socotra cormorant is an endangered bird. There's only 13 colonies globally where this bird nests, and they're all around here. So if you lose any of these colonies, it's very serious. And development can disturb these colonies, and you can lose them. So I want to monitor and make sure that all these nesting birds are looked after. So that's part of what I do, and to make sure that the contracts are all running smoothly, and we have enough work to keep everyone happy. And we're also, all the work fits in with what we're about, which is conserving and looking after the marine environment.
Is your founder still
present in the organization? Yes, Major Ali, he's the founder.
He's the founder?
He's the founder, yes.
Oh.
Major Ali Suwaidi.
What's your name again?
K-E-I-T-H Wilson. W-I-L-S-O-N. Yep.
Okay.
So that's okay.
Are most of the animals that you find or see, are they dead?
We've got a lot of strandings on the beaches. Things this time of year, things like snakes. They're very common in the Gulf. Several species, maybe 8 or 9 species in the Gulf, and they don't like the cold water. So if they're getting old or they're ill, they'll die at this time of year. But the water's only 18 at the moment, which is quite cold for here. So at that time of year, we get a lot of dead animals on the beaches. But no, we monitor in the environment as well. We do scuba surveys for fish, scuba surveys for corals. So we monitor both live and dead animals.
What was your most challenging project, and why was it challenging?
Well, the coral translocation I mentioned at the end of my presentation was quite challenging, because you cannot move corals in the summer. It's too hot, and they're very stressed, and they're all going to die. And the work was scheduled to take place on the 1st of November, and I was only told about it in August, and I couldn't do it in August. I couldn't start work, so I had to move 11,000 corals in 5 weeks. And Ramadan was also involved during that period, which made it quite difficult to get all the work done. But we organised the logistics. The logistics means making the transport, getting everyone starting, understanding what they need to do. And each dive pair were able to chisel off 100 corals and then translocate them and stick them in one day, which is very fast working.
What's the temperature you need to
render? The at that time of year it was around 28, so not too stressful. Late 20s. Early 30s is very stressful for corals, 30 and above. Below 30 is not too bad. But 27 is about optimum. That's perfect for them.
Can you tell us about the conservation effort and give us an example?
Conservation effort by EMEG?
Yeah.
Well, Major Ali's been involved in lots of translocations, things like the new airport up in Jebel Ali. When the contractors come in, all the animals are killed. So he'll go in and collect all the animals up, like this dub you've just seen here, and that's just come from the airport, and then translocate them to somewhere where the population could do with some enhancement, somewhere where it's been, say, overgrazed, and the area is trying to be brought back into a natural area. So we translocate the animals. The coral translocation you've heard about, these corals would otherwise be destroyed.
talking to people like you, making you understand perhaps a little bit more about the local environment. This is all you're the future. If it's your attitudes to the environment that matter, you know, if you care about the environment, you'll look after it. So the education program is quite important. It's all a conservation effort.
What was your most successful project?
In the UAE or just
no,
generally?
No,
with the imagery. It's been quite a tricky period. We've had the credit crunch, as it's called. So it's been a difficult period for everyone here. Things like funding's dried up and people owe you money and they don't pay. You know, it's been quite a difficult period. So I think trying to get EMEG stable again and getting a steady income and perhaps moving from a reliance on Dubai, which is much more troubled than Abu Dhabi, and getting work in Abu Dhabi is quite important. So it's providing stability for the organisation, I think, is what's occupied me the most.
Have you had other, like, important
jobs? I sort of, in my career, sort of worked up and I'm working myself down now. I was originally started in as a biochemist, then retrained, did a master's degree, worked in the water industry in the UK. I worked for 13 years in the UK and I got steadily promoted. And in the end, I was the regional fisheries and conservation manager for the Northwest. So I had a population of about 15 million people, something like that, which is a big catchment base. So it's quite a big responsibility. I used to run the salmon industry, inshore fisheries, and look after all the rivers and streams. So that was quite a senior position. But I also wanted to travel. So when I had a small family, two small daughters, they were about to start school. It was a good time so I'm going to travel, the time to do it was then. So I went abroad to Hong Kong and started working for the Hong Kong government. And there I was involved. I used to look after the capture fisheries and the mariculture industry there, which is quite a big responsibility. The Chinese eat fish every day. So fisheries products are a big industry there. And their landed catch was about 180,000 tonnes, which is a very large catch. So it was quite a big industry. So I looked after that. And I also got involved in conservation there. I helped set up marine parks, marine protected areas, which is quite a long, involved process. And I established quite a few marine protected areas, which is quite satisfying. And now I've come to work in the UAE to experience new environments. So all the work I've enjoyed. I think in terms of positions, the most senior positions would have been in UK and in Hong Kong. But it's still an important position here for EMEG.
What's your most recent project this year?
Well, the one this morning, I suppose. That's trying to win the contract with TDIC. And this is to do the environmental and wildlife monitoring at Sabanias Island. Sabanias is SIRBANIYAS, Sabanias, and the Discovery Islands. This is work we hope to win, and we want to start a new contract there in the first issue. I think so, yeah, it's a good meeting, yeah, it went well.
When was the MEG created?
MEG was around. It's on the website. So if you want to log into the website, you'll find all the information you need about the setting up and establishment of the MEG.
Do you for how long are you in this association? How many years are you in MEG?
MEG since 1st of May 2008.
Are you volunteer?
No, I'm an employee. If this is a paid position.
How many hours per day do
you work? Hours of work. I think the statutory hours of work are 8 o'clock until 4, 5 days a week. But it's pretty flexible, really.
Do you
We work weekends. We work according to what needs to be done.
Do you find it long?
What, 8 till 4?
Yeah.
To the canteen? Yes. Maybe once a week, something like that.
Can you give us an example of insects away from the UAE? They don't exist anymore in the UAE. Can you give us an example?
Extinct animal?
Yeah.
The Ubra bustard is a very famous bird. The sheikhs like to hunt with hawks, and the Ubra bustard breeds in Iran, all around the Himalayas, so right up into China. And many of the birds migrate and spend the winter in the UAE, and historically have been hunted, but there are none left. The birds that come here get killed by hawks, so they don't tend to come here anymore. So there's a program now at Al Ain Zoo for growing the Ubra bustard, trying to get them back. And you've probably heard about the oryx, the Arabian oryx. There's another introduction scheme. I think they were all wiped out, and there was a guy very, very keen on oryx, in fact a UK guy, a gambler, who were breeding these oryx, and this was the main source of all the Arabian oryx that are left. And they have now been, that's a very successful program. So there have been two reintroductions, and the Arabian oryx is one of the most successful animal introductions ever. They were extinct, and now they're back in the wild again.
And you spell
Ubra? Ubra is H-O-U-B-A-R-A. Ubra. Ubra bustard. B-U-S-T-A-R-D. And of course, there's another one, Arabian leopard. It still exists. You'll find it on the border between Yemen and Oman. So it would have been all over the whole peninsula at one time. But you won't find any Arabian leopards in the UAE anymore.
Two more questions, okay? And
then yes.
You know, yes.
Are you well paid?
We did.
I probably earn half what I used to earn. But it's enough. My two daughters have finished university now. I've put them through college, so I don't need so much income now.